coming up for air. I see my angel all the same. She's running up to me.
I can stand like really close to you. So
Laura's going
to
borrow my microphone. There you go, Laura. Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started, guys.
Good morning. My name is Laura Burkham, and I work on the Crossing Kids Family Events team, and I'm just so excited to have you all here. Obviously, this topic is important and nerve-wracking and exciting, so we're just really thankful for the Wamplers, Kelly and Ryan, to be here today. They put a lot of heart and soul and research and just investment in this topic with their kids. I think they've been parents for 13 years, on staff for 15, so we're just really grateful for them to share what they have to say. A couple housekeeping things. If you didn't register for the class, that's great. We're so happy you're here, but we want to make sure and get you on the email for future follow-ups. So I have a clipboard that'll go around, just put your name and email. We are recording it today, so for people who missed it, we'll have that available later on. And then also, we love to hear new topics that you need help on, that you want advice about. Let me know, send me an email, stop me in the foyer. Would love to hear what else you guys need. So thank you so much, Kelly and Ryan. I think it's an applause kind of.
No. Although I'm going to have to say a lot of embarrassing words this morning, so you can go ahead and cheer for me on that front right now. But hi, everybody. Welcome to the How to Talk to Your Kids About Sex class. Laura introduced us, but my name's Kelly Wampler. That's my husband, Ryan, adjusting my sound. Probably I'm too loud. That'd be as per usual. Okay. We've been on staff here for a long time. Ryan's one of the pastors, and I'm on staff part-time now, and we work with 20-somethings primarily. We've done senior high ministry and college ministry, and now work with 20-somethings, and so it's just a great privilege to be with you guys here this morning. And I just want to say thanks. Thanks for coming to consider this really important parenting topic. It's a topic that we're still really in the midst of considering ourselves. Laura mentioned that we have 3 children ourselves. Our oldest is 13. He's in 7th grade. We have an 11-year-old who's in 5th grade and a 1st grader who's 6. So we're still very much in the trenches of having these conversations ourselves. But why do we need to have a class like this? Well, we thought we'd start with this short video of interviews from kids on the street talking about common conceptions that they have about sex and how babies are made. So let's start off with this little video.
Instead of adults,
can we turn the lights off?
Teaching kids about sex, I think it would be less embarrassing if kids learned it from other kids. So we went out on the street this afternoon and we asked kids how babies are made, and we are very proud now to present the results of that inquiry for your education and pleasure.
Where do babies come from?
Ladies' tummies.
The ladies eat the babies?
No, they just get pregnant.
How are babies made?
The downstairs goes into the girls' downstairs.
Do you know where babies come from? How are babies made?
Babes.
From babes?
No, from babes.
Oh, from boobs. How are babies made?
When moms and dad makes love.
What kind of loser makes love?
I don't know.
Do you know where babies come from?
In a little pee.
How are babies made?
They.
Why is it so funny?
It's weird.
What's weird about it?
Knowing that my parents have to do it.
Where do babies come from? Explain to him.
Their mom?
Their mom?
Tummy, I don't know.
You don't know? Explain to him how it works.
Explain me?
Yeah.
How it come, like, they come out of a vagina.
Do you know how babies are made?
Yeah.
How?
It say blah blah she, blah 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 she,
how are babies made?
Gross.
Why is it gross?
Because it's health.
What do you mean health?
I'm not in fifth grade yet. I shouldn't know these stuff. Just where it comes from, I've seen Star Wars and it looks really gross and painful.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Kimmel. If you like that, click.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. That video just completely cracks me up, just watching all of their facial expressions and their awkwardness, just the looks on their face, even bringing up the topic. And the kid whose voice cracks, I heard that was the loudest laugh too. What? You know, can't even answer it. But knowing that how this is how kids can react to this topic can make us feel fearful in talking to them about sex, right? We can have fears that it's going to be uncomfortable, that we aren't going to know what to say. Maybe we think that we're not perfect in this area. And so how can we even begin to talk to our kids about this? Sometimes we worry that it's too early to talk to them, or we worry it's too late and somehow we've missed the window to speak to them about this. We wonder if this will make our kids think more about sex. I know we've thought this, like, gosh, it seems like this might be a good idea to bring this up, but what if it all of a sudden gets the ball rolling and they start thinking about it all the time in a way that's not good? We don't want that to happen. And lastly, maybe we're concerned that we just might say too much or too little. So there can be a lot of ambiguity and a lot of fears going into it. But even though so many of us share these same fears, I believe that God can begin to help us have a dialogue with our kids about their sexuality, and that by God's grace, it will pave the way for them to have a hopefully a really healthy view of this area of their lives. So whatever drove you here this morning, and I'm sure if we polled you guys on the reasons that you came, they would be many, but whatever drove you here this morning, I'm just so glad that you're here. Obviously, in 1 hour, we're not going to be able to cover everything there is to say about sex from, because I think we said the class was for if you are a preschool-age parent all the way to a middle-school-age parent, so you can imagine the range of topics in there. We're not going to cover everything, but here's what we are going to cover. We're going to cover four main things. One, it's that why it's important that we as parents are our kids' primary teacher about sex. We're going to cover what is biblical sexuality. You know, what is it that we're actually trying to teach our kids? We're going to cover what to say when. So what topics to cover at the specific ages and lots of resources that you can use at the various ages with kids. And lastly, we're going to cover a little bit about how would we trust God with our kids' sexuality. So that's sort of the outline for where we're headed this morning. But my goal really, and our goal when you leave this class, more than anything, is that I hope that you'll feel motivated, and I hope that you'll feel really equipped to begin to establish this kind of dialogue with your kids. So thanks for being here. Ryan's going to cover our first point.
There we go. All right. My idea for the intro was to us wrap together Salt and Pepper's classic, Let's Talk About Sex. But this was her idea, so. But I think, when we think about, or we could have just showed that scene from Star Wars. I don't know what party's talking about. I don't know. But we need, the next thing that we want to talk about is why should we be the ones to shape our kids? Because it's awkward, it's nerve-wracking. Maybe our parents and have many conversations with us. So why is it that we should be the kids' primary teacher about sex? Well, one is the Bible sets it up this way, is that we need to train our kids in how their lives should go. Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. So whenever we're discouraged and we're wondering what in the heck is happening with our parenting, is it working? Are our kids learning anything? We need to remember this verse that, you know, God says that more is happening in our parenting process than we realize. And we get to train them in how their lives should go. And sometimes it's easy for us to just think, well, kids will just kind of naturally learn this stuff. They're naturally good, innocent people, young minds. But this is why the Bible presents young minds. Proverbs 29:15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Or Proverbs 22:15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. And so our kids need training. They need correction because there's folly that's bound up in their heart. And certainly that comes out in all kinds of ways in their sexual lives as they grow up. And so we need to give them the wisdom to choose wisely in those situations. And the question we need to ask, if it's not us, then who's going to be teaching our kids in their view of sexuality? Well, it's going to be other kids, the blind leading the blind there. It's going to be music. It's going to be movies. It's going to be teachers in the sex ed class. It's going to be the internet. It's going to be social media. These are going to be the things that are going to shape our, how our kids think about sex. And it's important for us to take a minute and even think about how is our culture shaping how people think about sexuality. And one is that we are living in the ongoing wave of the sexual revolution that happened in the 1960s in the United States. And in many ways, the sexual revolution was a reaction against some unbiblical views of sexuality, some not unhealthy views of sexuality that were before that time. You know, if you watch those 1950s old school TV sitcoms, you know, the parents sleep in separate twin beds, you know, you see their bedroom, and, you know, you don't dance with people because that's really bad. You know, and so there's kind of even some negative reactions against that, but what that began happening is began to emphasize sexuality apart from marriage and commitment. That sex is something that you don't need to be married in order to experience. And that sex is primarily about our own personal fulfillment. And so that, you know, this rise happened during the rise of birth control in the United States. And that part of the drive to create birth control was the sexual revolution of we can have sex without the commitment necessary to have kids, to have families. More and more it began, if I desire it, it must be right. If I have sexual desires, that must be who I am. They must be right. They must be good for me. And actually, any authority outside of my desires that is trying to restrain my desires is actually seen more and more as repressive and unhealthy. And so this is the environment that, that our kids are in. You know, and so we live in a hyper-sexualized culture now. And so if you're a father and you're watching a baseball game with your sons and in between innings, you're having to sit through sexual commercials, whether it be for Hardee's or, you know, whatever
Viagra.
They need to sell. What's it?
Viagra.
Oh, yeah, oh, lots of those kinds of commercials. That's right. You know, or if you're driving with your kids to school in the morning and you're flipping through the radio stations, you're going to come across Y107 and you hear, you know, all kinds of stuff sung about sexually on the radio. And it's like, can you write songs that don't deal with sex? You know, pop songs. Are there any pop songs out there that are about anything other than sex? It seems like it sometimes. You know, and now our kids even have smartphones, or they're at school with kids who have smartphones and devices, you know, where they have access to all kinds of images and content that has been sexualized. But this has also led to a deepening sexual confusion amidst our kids and our culture. It's because more and more we're told to look inside to our own desires to discover who we are, to discover ourselves. But the problem is that our desires are changing all the time. People go through phases of desiring different kinds of things. But instead, we're told to experiment, to discover who you are, to discover what you desire. And this leads to more and more sexual confusion in our culture. And not only that, but sex has begun meaning less and less. There was a couple years ago where I was told from someone that there was a college girl broken up, devastated by the breakup, hurting, depressed to the point where she goes to get some advice and help. And so she goes to the counseling system at the University of Missouri. And when she's sitting there telling about how she's depressed about the breakup, the advice of the counselor was, well, what you need to do is you need to go sleep with someone else so that you can get over the breakup. You know, is that was the advice that she was given by a professional trained professional psychologist. Because sex doesn't mean that much. It's just a way for you to feel good about yourself. You know, and that's more and more of how people in our culture are thinking about sex. And now we have things like Tinder, which is the dating app where you can just flip through images. You don't even have to know anything about the person. You just see the image. You can make a decision. You can hook up with that person, set up a time to go meet the person, have sex, and be done. You know, and that's the way that sex is occurring with 20-somethings sometimes in our culture. As a matter of fact, some 20-somethings reported that it's more intimate to have a conversation than it is to have sex. That's what some reported in this study for them. And so sex is meaning less and less. And what's happening as a result of this sexual revolution is that it's causing increased loneliness, an inability to love and connect with others, all kinds of pornography addictions, And that even though that the sexual revolution is promising that you can have more and more sex, better sex and more sex, in reality, it's interesting that the statistics are showing the exact opposite, is that actually people are having less sex and less qualitative sex. And that's what some of the studies are now showing, which is interesting. But there's all kinds of results, the effects that this is having on our young people in our culture today. There's a great sociologist, his name's Christian Smith, he's a sociologist at University of Notre Dame, and he's one of the preeminent sociologists in talking about the religious beliefs and how that affects their lives. And he's been studying this generation since they were high school students and into the 18 to 25-year-old range. And so he has done several studies, but this is one of the things that he said, is that now with this study, that the average age for the first sexual encounter of this generation is 16. That's the average age of the first sexual encounter. By age 18 to 23, 85% have had sex with three oral sex partners and three intercourse partners. And that what's interesting, though, is that even though many, many of these people are obviously having sex, but one of the things that's happening, though, is that it's having all kinds of emotional and social consequences on their lives. Is that the vast majority of these people are reporting that they have regrets about their decisions of who they slept with. It's leading to depression, devastating breakups, and the inability to build lasting, healthy relationships. And so many of them actually even reported that they now realize that they did not have the wisdom to make good sexual decisions when they were younger. So that's what they report later after having learned the smarts. You know, they might have thought differently. You know, our kids think that they know it, think that they have the wisdom that they need, but in reality, we need to help them to see that, no, they don't have all the wisdom that they need. And that's one of the things that the stats say. But we also live in a hypersexualized culture that's even being drastically affected by pornography. You know, back when we were younger, it was you had to do the embarrassing walk of shame into the gas station, to ask for the pornography magazine behind the gas station, which limited a lot of access to pornography. And now everyone has smartphone devices, and it's made pornography far more available, and pornography is drastically shaping the way that young people think about pornography. Here's a few stats from Tim Challies. The average age of the first encounter with pornography is 11. This one's a little sobering too, so this is a little difficult of a stat to understand, but here, it's 22% of pornography. So all those who are consuming pornography under the age of 18, 22% of those are under the age of 10. So if you don't think that your kids would ever want to have access to it, the reality is that they, if they have a smartphone device, it's very easy for them. 70% of porn is actually watched on a smartphone. Not only that, but people are becoming desensitized to pornography. 96% of young adults are either encouraging, accepting, or neutral in their view towards pornography. Barna Research even did this thing where they said they were ranking what people thought, whether they considered this immoral or not. And so they did all kinds of things that they say, is this immoral or not? So 56% of people ranked failure to recycle as immoral, okay, 56%. 46, this is ages 13 to 24. 48% ranked overeating as immoral. 38% ranked a significant consumption of electricity and water as immoral. And 32% ranked viewing pornographic images as immoral. So ages 13 to 24 consider failure to recycle, consuming too much water and electricity, overeating as more immoral than pornography. So that is where our stats are. In case we are wondering if it's just a boy problem, 33% of women aged 25 and under go searching for porn once a month, is what the stats show. And with, you know, obviously we texting and phone images, 62% of teens and young adults, 62% have received a sexually explicit image. So what is all this pornography doing? Well, one of the things is that there is a study by the American College of Pediatrics that has done a study on the effects of pornography exposure for kids. And this is what they've said, it's particularly for boys, what this does is it causes an increased callousness towards women. That viewing pornography makes them more callous towards women. For everybody, it increases their dissatisfaction with their sexual partner. Is that it makes them less content with their future spouses by viewing pornography. That's the effect that it happens in their life. It makes them more open to rape, more open to extramarital sex, more deviant pornography. It also creates a decreased interest in marriage and children. Whew. So I'm not saying all this to make us afraid. I'm not saying, here's the forces you're up against. Well, good luck. But I do want to sober us that if we're going to encourage our kids to live faithfully with God's design, they're going to have to go against the grain of our culture in this area. Because this is how our culture is shaping our children. This is what other kids are reinforcing in terms of their attitude towards sex. This is what magazines and songs and movies are reinforcing. And so if there's one thing that, you know, that we need to try to help our kids, and that we've tried to help our kids develop, is just an attitude that if you're going to be faithful to God, that is going to mean you're going to have to be different than the kids around you. That you're going to have to do things differently. You're not going to do the same things. And that needs to be an overall approach to how our kids think about sexuality. If they don't buy into that, they're just going to be shaped by the culture. They need, and recognizing this, that if we're trying to help them get in, to buy into that, to be willing to be different, that means they're going to need all kinds of training. They're going to need encouragement. They're going to need help along the way to be different, because that's not going to be easy. And they are going to feel lonely, and they are going to feel weird, and we need to help reinforce them that this is a good thing for them. And so the church can play a part. If we just think, well, I'll just send my kids to church and this is going to solve all their problems. Well, that plays a part, but it's we are the best hope that our kids have of developing a healthy sexual view and sexual practice. We can't let it be technology that's teaching our kids, other kids, their friends, even the schools, because none of them will shape them in the way that we have the opportunity to shape them as parents. And so we have the chance to set them up for experiencing real love, real intimacy, real joy of sharing all of yourself with someone in marriage. And so they don't have the wisdom that they need. They might not think that they need our help. They might think it's weird or awkward when we try to talk to them about this area, but we have to try. And also let me say something to dads in here. You know, dads, that we have to be engaged to. Yeah, even though our kids might be around our wives more and they have more opportunities to talk to them, is that we have to be engaged in having conversations with our kids too. That we have to be the ones to have conversations with our sons about their view of sexuality and developing their view of sexuality. That not only that our daughters are having their expectations set for their future boyfriends, their future husbands by how we treat them and how we treat their mother. You know, so we have an incredibly significant part that we need to play. And more positively, this is the privilege that we get. The privilege of shaping the way that our kids think about this wonderful thing that God has made. And they're listening and they're watching more than we know. And so what's our role? Our role is, in some ways, I could summarize in five things. One is, what are we modeling? You know, that we are modeling something, and we need to model the right things with our kids. And it's going to be imperfect, but we need to model the right things. Secondly, we need to build an open, trusting relationship with our kids. Thirdly, we need to have the intention to have a series of conversations with them on the topic, which we'll talk about what that can look like later. And fourthly, we need to cultivate relationships beyond our family who reinforce a biblical approach to sexuality. So when our kids get into middle school, you know, having them involved at church, getting involved with a small group, whether it's being led by a college-age leader, or getting them involved with Young Life or K-Life, you know, other ministries where they can be shaped by people who are going to encourage them to be different, to follow God, to be faithful to God in all areas of life, is going to be crucial. And then lastly, we need to protect our kids in their technology use. So the goal, though, is that we're going to help, during their time under our roof, is helping them develop an inward conviction about, you know, pleasing God in this area of their lives. You know, and so that when they leave our house, when they go out from under our roof, that they're going with that conviction. And it's going to be messy now. It's going to be consequences and training and discipline and all kinds of things in their life right now, and protecting them in some ways. But we're hoping that God uses that messy process to really develop an inward conviction in their life that they carry with them. And so what is the biblical view of sexuality that we're trying to shape our kids with? Because there's all kinds of myriad of messages out there about what sex is. And so what does the Bible teach us about what sex is? How are we trying to shape them that way? Well, one is we want our kids to know that sex is God's idea. That the person who knows about the sex is not Dr. Ruth. I know that's kind of like an our age, you know, sexual expert. They're Dr. Ruth. They won't know. But whoever it is that they think is the sexual expert, if they think Katy Perry is the sexual expert, if they think the TV show they watch is the show that knows the most about sex, is that our kids need to build a conviction that God is the one who made sex. He's designed sex. He knows how it's best used. And that's his idea. Genesis 2 there. I'm not going to read the whole passage for the sake of time, but I want us to focus there in 24 and 25. This is what God designed sex for in the very beginning. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother, hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed. You know, and so we see that sex is God's idea, that we want them to trust God with their view of sexuality. But what we want to see is that sex is good. It's beautiful. It's even good to delight in the naked body, to know and enjoy intimacy with another person. That's a good thing. God has designed it that way. Song of Solomon is actually a book of the Bible that has several descriptions of the joy and the pleasure of sex and being intimate in this way. Now, and you know, one danger that we can have, and sometimes Christians and parents, is that we miss the primary starting point of where the Bible, what the Bible has to say about sex to our kids. That is good. See, because we can find ourselves telling them only what's bad about sex or things that they can't do sexually, that they get a negative view of sex. There's even people who have described experiences of growing up in a Christian home and then getting married and having a very difficult time feeling good about sex with their spouse. Because for so long, it was something they felt shameful about, something that was dirty, something that was bad. You know, and so we need to help. We don't want our kids to feel this way about sex. We want them to feel that sex is good, that God made it, that it's good. Or even the fact that our kids have sexual desires. I know this is scary. You know, your kids start having sexual desires. You might see it or notice it. They're gawking a little bit at the television commercial. You know, they're kind of looking at Victoria's Secret when they're walking by. Or they might ooh and ah when two people kiss in a TV show, whatever it might be. You know, is that we begin to notice that there's sexual desire, and all of a sudden, you know, our alarm's going off. You know, oh, this is not good. What happened to my sweet, innocent kid?
Shut it down.
Yeah, sure. Don't have any sexual desires until you're 20, you know, or 25, when you're ready to get married. You know, but so we can have this approach, but the reality is that that's not bad. It's not bad that they have those, or even this. Even the drive that they have that makes pornography and premarital sex tempting to them is not bad. So what we don't want to communicate is, oh, you're a dirty little boy, you're a dirty girl for wanting to do these things. His reality is that desire that they have is actually a good, that God has created us as sexual beings. It's just that we want to help them see that God has given them these wonderful desires, but that the best, safest, and most fulfilling place to satisfy those desires is where God has designed for those desires to be satisfied. And that's in a marriage relationship. And see, the reality is that the second point of the Bible, or the third point we want to see here, is that our sexual desires can become bent. See, on the one hand, while the Bible does affirm that God created us as sexual beings with sexual desires, it also tells us that our sexual desires can be misdirected. You know, and that's true of every desire we have, right? I mean, our desire for food when we're hungry can be bent towards junk food, right? It can lead to bad eating habits. You know, people desire opioids. You know, who've been exposed to it, you know, and want that as relief for their pain ongoing in their life. You know, there's all kinds of desires that can be bad for us. And so part of our job, and this is really difficult, but part of our job is to help our kids not always trust their desires. That's hard, isn't it? I mean, that's kind of a mature thing to develop over time. So we're trying to give them guidance and rules, but in the meantime, we're trying to teach them and explain to them why they can't always trust their desires, you know, and that following desires is not always going to be good for them. And then next we see that sex is for marriage, as I said. So sex is designed to be an expression, an experience of the commitment that we make in marriage. So in Genesis, when God created, he says, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife. So there's a commitment. That's what precedes it. And then the commitment leads into the sexual intimacy, is knowing and experiencing oneness. So sex is meant to follow commitment. That's the way that God has designed it to be. And so the reason is, or one of the things that we see is that sex has this wonderful purpose of bonding people together physically, emotionally, and spiritually. It's a wonderful thing that God has designed. It really is powerful. It does more than what our culture thinks. Our culture thinks that sex is really not that big a deal. It really doesn't do that much. It's just, we can think primarily about ourselves rather than a commitment where I'm putting somebody else's need in front of my own, and then I'm trying to love somebody, that now it's instead, how does this person make me feel? Do I think they're attractive? You know, well, that's good enough for me to have sex with them. It's just sex. But sex is something better. Why would we want to give ourselves to somebody who isn't committed to us, isn't committed to our own good? And see, this is what the problem is with sex outside of marriage, is that it produces insecurity, particularly in girls. You know, and it produces self-centeredness, particularly in boys. You know, and so we're bonding ourselves to someone who isn't committed to us, so that means it creates insecurity, or we're having sex with someone that we're not committed to, which creates self-centeredness. And so many boys are having to learn to not treat women as sexual objects to lust after. That's a common struggle that I hear college students and 20-somethings talk about, is they're having to fight to think about women as not just sexual objects for them to satisfy their lust after. Girls are having to learn that their worth doesn't come from who wants to sleep with them. And so, and everyone is having to wrestle with these insecurities and these regrets, as even the sociological data has said, is that will this person keep loving me after I've given them this precious part of myself? Or I regret that I gave this part of myself to someone who didn't really love me. So we want to prepare people, save people from that pain and that heartbreak. Is breakups become all the more devastating after kids have had sex. And sexual acts, on the one hand, make this bond, but on the flip side, they also put pressure on the relationship, so any crack, any insecurity in a relationship becomes all the more intense in the relationship. And so it's this fused, I'm bonded, but we've got problems, and now we're fighting all the time about this relationship, but we can't break up. And that's what sometimes happens in these relationships. So what we need to do is, what we're not trying to say is, you have these sexual desires, but the Bible doesn't want you to have fun. The Bible doesn't want you to have pleasure. And so just stop it. What we're trying to say is actually, if you settle here with your sexual desires, it's going to lead to problems and heartbreak in your life. It's better to wait for what God has meant for that to be. We're trying to tell them that there's something better that's worth waiting for. But part of the problem is what we need to do is not just, part of the reason why our young kids want to get married is so they can have sex. Sex becomes the ultimate end. And what we need to do is help them to see that actually, no, marriage is better than sex. Living your life committed to another person, putting their interest above your own, is better than just having your own needs met sexually. And one of the things that we need to ask ourselves is, what kind of marriage are we modeling for our kids? This is hard. All of us do it imperfectly. But one of the things we need to do is to give our kids a high view of marriage and develop a high view of marriage for them. so that is our marriage something that our kids would want for their life? You know, and as we begin to say that sex is for marriage, sex is meant to serve marriage, that marriage is even the better thing, then, anyway. But the other thing is this. It's not just for marriage. It's also for babies and families. Because this security of two broken, selfish people who are committed to work through their problems, are committed to staying together, are committed to making it work, is actually the best environment to bring a baby into the world and for a baby to experience that security and that comfort, right? That's what sex is meant to do, is it's meant to occur in this context. And so when we talk to our kids, we need to help tie sex with marriage and having children. And so one of the things we need to help them know is if I'm not ready for a family, I'm not ready for sex. If I'm not ready for at least a family to be possible. You know, obviously, you know, there might be people who get married at 22 right out of college or something like that. You know, they may not be ready per se to have kids, but they could at that point, right? They could at least make a family possible. And so what we want to help them say is that if I'm not ready for family, I'm not ready for sex, because sex is tied to marriage and family. And that good sex is worth waiting for. And this is really hard because, I mean, just what it means to be a teenager is that you're impulsive and that you are living for the moment, you're living for the day, you're not thinking about the rest of your life, you're not caring about when you're 40 or 50 or 60, you're concerned about what it means right now, whether you're 18 or 14 or, you know, this is where they're at. But we need to help them develop a long-range view. You know, and so, for example, fathers, if our son is getting ready to go out on a middle school dance or something like that, you know, that's you know, about helping them to say, look, how do you want the person that's going to a dance with your future wife to treat your future wife tonight? You know, if your future wife is going out on a dance tonight, how do you want her date to treat her? You know, we need to begin to develop a long-term perspective for them and help them see that, you know, waiting for your future spouse, don't you want your future spouse to wait for you? Isn't that worth waiting for yourself? My last point, and then I've talked way too long anyway, but last point for me is that sexual purity is not the most important thing with our kids. And so our kids need to know, they need to feel this way. They need to not just know it, they need to feel it, that if they mess up, that we're still going to love them and help them. You know, that we need to help them know that God always invites us back when we mess up. He always invites us to get back up on the horse and start again and try again. And so our love for our kids is more than their sexual purity. But it is true that because we love them, we want to help them live as wisely as much as possible. You know, and so the big picture is this, is that sex is a good gift given by God, and it's meant to be a delight within the covenant of marriage. You know, and so for younger children, we begin shaping it by trying to simplify. We can say something like, God created all things good. God created sex as a part of marriage, and that means sex is good. God made it part of mommy and daddy being happy together, and sex is how you were made. You know, we're beginning to find ways to communicate the biblical view of sex. And so this is the big picture of what we're trying to help our kids learn. But how do we do that along the way? What are we to say when?
Tag team. All right, my turn. Okay, like he said, obviously you're not going to say everything he just said to a three-year-old. Now, Bobby, let me tell you, and rattle all that off. Okay, so how do you know what to say when? Well, I'd like to propose a couple kinds of conversations to have with your kids along the way. Planned conversations and unplanned conversations. Let's just start with planned conversations. It's kind of what it sounds. It's a planned conversation. But it's really a series of age-appropriate conversations that you're going to have with your kids. They can really start as early as age 3, but maybe even if you've got a 3 to 5-year-old kid, you could even start somewhere in the 3 to 5 range. All the ideas, what they do is just sort of start to cast the biblical framework when they're young, and you're going to keep building on it then as they get older. So your goal partially is that you're trying to seek to ask and answer the questions before your kid even knows to begin to ask them. So that you're sort of staying one step ahead of them as a parent in terms of what they're going to be thinking about, in terms of what they're going to be hearing around them and experiencing or learning next. So in your handout, there's a chart titled, What Should I Say About Sex? So go ahead and flip there with me for just a second. It talks about age-appropriate topics for kids. This chart was written by Julie Lowe. She's a counselor, and she teaches at CCEF, which is the Christian Counseling Education Foundation. If those of you are familiar with Paul Tripp at all and done any of his parenting stuff, that's the organization that he used to work with before, so she's worked with him. But she wrote this lovely chart to kind of go over, well, what could we cover at different ages? And I think it really simplifies it. So you can identify where your kid is at on this chart and think, hey, have I covered some of these things? And go from there. But for toddlers and preschoolers, you can start teaching the names of their body parts. You know, she really emphasizes, and just about everything I've emphasized, as much as we do not like it and we want to use slang words, to not use slang words. Because you're only going to have to undo that as they get older, and you really have to start saying more things as they get older, and you go, really, it wasn't the wee-wee, you know. So go ahead and just start off with the words. Get used to saying them now, because you're going to say them a lot. You can do this at bath time, or whenever you're to get an owie, or whatever, whenever you can talk to your kids. One of the things that she doesn't list on here, but I know she agrees with, is just to say that God has made them, to start casting the view that they're special and that God knew them and they're unique and he's made all of them. Go ahead and start lay that framework when they're little. You can teach kids to respect their bodies and the bodies of others. Introducing the idea of privacy. If you've ever had a toddler out at the mall, you know you have to do this in the bathroom, like, hey, quit looking under the stall. You know, that person needs their privacy. So you can start laying that framework when they're little. You can talk about what appropriate touch and affection is for others. Hitting is not appropriate. We touch people like this. No, we don't touch them like this, you know, or lay on them. So you can start giving them the idea what it looks like to have themselves respected and others. And lastly, she doesn't list this on here, but Ryan said that, hey, we're living in the technology era now. There's no getting around it. So if your kid is on a device of any kind, an iPad, if you ever give them your phone in the store, if you your babysitter has a phone, I don't care what it is, anything. I think it's important, even starting as young as preschool, to start teaching them what the difference between good pictures and bad pictures are. And I have a really great resource to help with this. This is perfect for young kids. I think it's even good up to elementary age, young elementary age. It's called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. And it just begins to cast the view of if they stumble across a bad picture on a computer, what they could do. So I really enjoy this book a lot. Because the goal of little people, especially that is with technology, is just to start to protect them. You know, we don't want technology to be the intruder that's teaching our kids in ways that we didn't mean to. We want us to be the teachers and then start to, and so to protect them and just keep them from it as they're young and then help them to teach them how to use it wisely as they get older. In elementary school, what you're going to do is just keep building on the ideas. And one of the ideas that you're going to add in is just what is God's good design for sex? So I really think by third or fourth grade, you need to have the sex conversation. Fifth grade, in my experience, and just from talking to other parents, is too late. They just start to hear so much from their peers. I mean, it's never too late. I'm going to say this at the end. But by fifth grade, it really becomes more of a topic of conversation around their friends. They start hearing what the word sexy is, and, you know, they start guessing about various things. Or kids who have older siblings, like we're experiencing this with our little kid now, we're like, quit talking about cuss words in the car, you know, to the middle schooler. So friends that have older siblings, sometimes it comes up. Yeah, or the neighbor, that's right. The T-Myers are our neighbors. Sometimes the neighbor kid tells one of your kids about sex before you meant to, but you know, there's forgiveness. We all love each other, lots of grace.
Those T-Myers.
Yeah, T-Myers. So go ahead and talk about God's good design for sex. You're not going to talk about a lot of the brokenness, you know, and a lot of the deviations from it at that point until maybe later. I'll make a caveat about that, but mostly the good design. Continue to talk about respecting their body and the bodies of others, maybe who can see them naked. Talk about appropriate behavior to guard against sexual abuse so that they know, like, that nobody should be touching them in the area. We always say in the areas where your bathing suit is or, you know, where your underwear are, things like that. Puberty is a great thing to talk about in upper elementary. So you can just talk about how their body is going to start changing. Definitely have that conversation. All right, here we go.
Start smelling the BO.
Right. We need to have a deodorant conversation. Son, this is deodorant. Let me show you how to use it. Okay. issues of masturbation. I was like, if I'm gonna model to you that we can say all these words, I was like, am I gonna say all these words out loud in a class? I'm going to, okay? So I figure if I'm gonna say them, then therefore you're gonna say them too. But issues of masturbation can come up with kids in elementary school, really of kids of any age. And so addressing it with them and having a conversation about it if you need to. And then lastly, the tech again. I think every kid, I don't know anybody, maybe if you have an elementary age kid and they're never on a tech device, raise your hand. Right, nobody. Okay, that's what I thought. So continuing to have conversations about, even more explicitly now, probably about what pornography is. And I don't say, I mean, Ryan listed all those stats, but truly, I mean, my friends' kids have run across pornography even in school on occasion. School laptops, you know, the schools are doing a good job trying to protect the kids, but it's just not foolproof. Nothing is completely foolproof. So again, to have them to know, or kids, if they're friends whose phones are not filtered in any way, it'll come up there. So to continue to have that conversation, maybe go through an internet contract. That's something we did with our kids in elementary age. It's included in your packet. It gives you a little bullet point thing to talk to about what you're promising to help your kids with regard to the internet and what you're expecting of them to do on the internet. That was, I think, what age did we do that? Third grade?
Third or fourth.
Yeah. We found that was a really helpful way to have a good dialogue with our kids about technology.
We continue to revisit it. You know, and so when right. There's a new issue that comes up with what they're asking to use, we'll go back and revisit. Well, remember, this is the commitment. But it does demand something on our part, which is to be aware and to help our kids, you know, be able to use their devices in the way they want to, just as long as it fits within the restrictions. But it takes research on our part, and but it's been really helpful.
Yeah, we want this app, Mom. Can I get this app? Well, we promise to look at the app, and we'll let you know, and blah, blah, blah. Okay. Middle school, more puberty stuff, more body changes, at least with our middle schooler and with a lot of the things I've read, just continuing to say, hey, the changes that are happening to you are good and they're normal. And so you might be like, what's going on? Is this normal? You know, you can just be the voice of encouragement. Yes, it's normal. And yes, it's good. Differences between men and women. Things about sexual attraction, I think, come up even more at this age. So as Ryan mentioned earlier, to reinforce that, hey, being attracted to the opposite sex is a good thing. You know, God has made it for you to be that way. But what's an appropriate way to express it at this point? That we don't just, again, back to the desire thing, we don't just act on all the desires that we have. Body image issues, how to dress appropriately. Those make sense and are probably straightforward. But the last thing that is going to come up more in middle school, and really it's because kids are just exposed more and more to it, more from their peers, and I think as you give them more freedom on media stuff, is that they're going to start hearing more things that are different than what you've taught them about God's design for sex. And so to have more of those conversations, sort of comparing the two, and welcoming those conversations as best you can. Again, pornography stuff, and it's not just the what. You know, like with like it was with the little kids. What is a good picture, bad picture? You know, what is it? Shut that. It's now getting more to the why. Why is it we don't look at people like that? How does God want us to view other people? Why is that different, you know, than what he wants? Again, more issues of masturbation. There you go. I just think it's a topic that needs to keep coming up. Homosexuality and transgendered stuff, they're definitely, we even had a long, if any of you watch Survivor still with your kids, we do. We had to have a whole conversation with our kids about transgendered stuff this week because there was a big episode on it, and it was a good chance for us to have a conversation about it. Oral sex and sexual activity outside of intercourse, because again, we're not really going to visit those things right away, you know, in God's design for sex, but as they get older, and Ryan told you the stats on some of those things, a lot of kids are like, ooh, I'm not having sexual intercourse, but I'm doing lots of other stuff. So to have those conversations about where do they fit in God's good design too. Okay, these things are hard to bring up, right? I mean, even just thinking about saying some of these words out loud to your kid might make you just go, ooh, I don't want to do that, you know? But it's so important to do it because everywhere around them, these things are going to be normalized. Even Rachel and I were talking this last week about how we watched Friends a long time ago and how they just used to joke about watching porn all the time. And I can't think of a show where porn doesn't come up and someone says, that's not a good idea. You know, everyone's just like, it's just a normal thing. Yes, we all watch this. So everywhere around them, it's going to be normalized. And so helping them to think through and talk about how God's design is different and how it's better is just important. Okay, lastly, high school. Continue to talk about attraction to the opposite sex and new temptations that they might be experiencing. they're going to have real life issues now. Now they're going to be hearing and seeing real life people doing real life things. And so being able to discuss, mom, this friend of mine, blah, blah, blah. Now it's really where the rubber's hitting the road. And continuing to compare that with God's good design, having that, discussing more about what their peers are saying. Yeah, and continuing to talk about the things that they're hearing culturally about sex. Okay, so I...
Real quick, we just decided...
You had your time, no kidding.
we decided that we wanted our kids to hear the information from us rather than from other kids. You know, and we wanted them to think that we knew more about sex than their friends knew about sex. You know, and so just the importance of trying to be ahead of the game of talking about the stuff before the kids, their kids, friends, you know, our friends of our kids do. So anyway,
yeah, one friend that I have, she even has younger kids, and she had the sex conversation with them, and she told them that and said, look, and she goes, and I'm even having sex. So I am the sex expert. These friends of yours, they are not even having sex. And I am, you know, because I'm married. And so I am the sex expert here. So come to me. And I thought, that cracks me up, but it's not bad. You know, it's like, you got a point. Your kid, that friend's not even doing it. Okay. Okay, so you might be overwhelmed. I know that looks like a long list. And every time I look at a chart like that, I think, how on earth am I going to cover all of these topics with my kids? I have some solutions. Okay, that's why we're here. All right. One of the things that I think that is the easiest, oh, he's going to be Vanna. Okay, Vanna. Easiest things to do is get your hands on a book series. That talks at age-appropriate times over these various topics. I love this book series. There's several of them out there, but this one, and I've looked at many at this point, this one happens to be my favorite. These two, so there's five of them in this particular set. There's another one, it's for parents even, about how to walk through the set. If you want that, that's on the resource table. But I'm holding the wrong one first. Starts at preschoolers, why boys and girls are different. And so it's just, again, starting with an easy framework. It goes through the whole, God made you, and, you know, you're great and special, and how he made boys and girls different, and things like that. And then this one, too, where babies come from. Again, casting more of a framework that they might be asking questions about at that point. These both can obviously be read, and let me just how thick they are. One sitting. You know, so you could read them several times with your kids when they're young, just to start laying that framework. These ones are for older kids. Ages 9 to, so they really are about every couple years, as you see, 3 to 5, 6 to 8, 9 to 11. This one covers a lot about puberty and the way your body is changing, and again, how God made you, and it's good that you're going through all that. This is high school. No, I'm holding the wrong one. This is the middle school one, Sex in the New You, and then the high school one. They cover so many topics, not just the topics on the paper that I gave you, so many other ones that you've, and they're current, which I really like. So they've got sexting in there, and they've got things about dating, and I don't know what all. They're just really good.
Also gender. These are all for girls.
Gender specific. There's boy ones I have back on the table. These happen to be girl ones too, so I really like that about it. So to me, this makes your life real easy. You just got to be intentional to sit down and go through it with them at some point. Another option, oh, I didn't bring the passport to purity up here, but that's okay. Another option, if you want to do it more in a concentrated way, you could have like a little away weekend with your kids and do, oh, there's Nathan T. Myers holding it up. Hey, I got two Vannas. I like it. It's called Passport to Purity. It's meant for you to have a weekend away with your, it's really geared for a preteen. I think the Summeralls did it with their preteen, now teenager. Yeah, last summer we're going to do it, I think, with our son this summer. So have some fun. There's five discs that it goes through, ideas on relationships and dating and sexuality. It's about $30 on Amazon, so that may be an option, something you want to do. For ages 6 to 10, there's also this guy, The Talk. This is unique because it was written by a guy that worked for Covenant Eyes. Covenant Eyes is an online software program to help families and individuals that are dealing with online pornography. And in his work with people over time that were struggling with the brokenness of what pornography had brought in their life and addiction, so many of them said to him, why didn't somebody tell me some of these things when I was younger? Why didn't they tell me the goodness and the freedom that God's design can bring? And he heard this, over and over again, he was like, I'm writing something for kids. So he's got seven lessons in here to introduce your child to the big book of sexuality. They're all rooted in a Bible passage. So I really like that. And he's geared it toward ages 6 to 10. So these, I'll be back there also. You can look at that. Okay, the tone of the conversation. Obviously, it just shouldn't really be rushed. It should just be a relaxed, comfortable, conversational, just like you're reading a book and dialoguing about it. Hey, let's read this together and let's talk about what it says. He just mentioned this, but as they've gotten older, I've told the kids, look, there's not anything you're gonna hear, and I think this is true. I think I'm telling the truth when I say this. Maybe not completely, but I hope so. That there's not anything that they're gonna hear that I haven't already heard, that I don't already know about. Even the crazy stuff, even if you're thinking there's some word that you're like, I can't ask my mom, she'll die if she hears that. I've heard it. You know, I use the leverage that we've worked with high school and college and 20-somethings, which helps. They believe that, so they think that I know a lot more about young people than maybe I do. But I always say to them, look, I know, so you can come to me and ask me. And I'd much rather you ask me, who's a person that's lived a life, that knows about these things, that's a Christ follower, and has some wisdom, than asking a computer or asking a peer. So please come. But the most important thing, like I said, is just to do them. I mean, I don't know about you, but we're busy. So trying sometimes to prioritize the things that are the most important things in life is hard to do. We found sometimes in the summer when our kids are off school is a little bit easier window for these ones that take a little bit longer to work through. So there's those. Okay, the second is unplanned conversations. And you can imagine what that is. Conversations you didn't know you were gonna have and they just popped into your life that day. Sometimes they happen because your child has a question. Sometimes they're just a teaching moment. Ryan mentioned walking in the mall past certain stores. Sometimes that prompts the conversation. Or sometimes it happens because our kids have made a mistake and we need to have a conversation with them about it. So, but you never know when these things are gonna happen and a chance to have a meaningful conversation is gonna come up. But he mentioned, I think you mentioned something similar, but Deuteronomy 6:6-7 says this. These commandments that I give you today, you the parents, are to be upon our hearts. So they're first to be things that we're supposed to be learning and trying to live out as Christ followers. And then we're to take them and impress them on our kids. And we're to talk about them when we sit at home and we walk along the road and when we lie down and when we get up. So there's all kinds of times throughout the day that we can be talking about God's good designs for things. So for older kids, maybe it's around the dinner table when you're talking about your day, or somehow mine wind up in the car a lot. I don't know why these questions come up in the car, but something about the car makes them come up. Watching some media stuff or just hearing things they saw online. For younger kids, you know, you can have unplanned conversations, you know, again, like at bath time, or especially when a friend is going to have a baby. How many of you have had, like, your kid ask a question all of a sudden when somebody was having a baby or you were having a baby? Like, how'd that baby get in there? You thought, oh, well, here we go. We're going to have a conversation right now. and I mentioned the mistake thing. You know, don't ignore it. It's so hard when you've caught your kid in some sort of mistake to just be like, oh gosh, you know, like I'm gonna ignore it, you know, or to overreact to it, either one. Don't ignore it. Pray. You know, God will help you with this and have an intentional conversation with them. I mean, I don't know if you can tell by my expressiveness, but my tendency when these unplanned conversations come up is to internally freak out. I think, oh gosh, you know, this was not on my to-do list today to talk about bleep, you know, whatever it is. But I've tried to train myself to think, okay, it's a good thing this is coming up. I told them that I wanted to come to me, that there wasn't anything that I hadn't heard or wasn't willing to talk about, and they're doing that. And so, okay, it's a good thing that this is happening. I'm having a chance to shape here. This is so good. So the goal is not to shame them or overreact or underreact or be awkward, but instead to just respond calmly and to seek to really be helpful. You know, seek to try to understand why they're asking the questions or whatever, but affirm them and say, I'm so glad, you know, that you're asking me this. So my one-liner is this, that instead of going, oh, you know, dying on the inside, is I've taught myself to just calmly say, hey, thanks so much for sharing that with me. You know, I'd love to talk to you about that. Why don't you tell me more about it? You know, what's bringing that to your mind? You know, where did you hear about that or whatever? Because I think the more we do that, they'll want to have the kind of relationship with us where they'll come, you know, and they will talk to us. Okay. Lastly, on that area of what to say when, it's just some tech tips. We've mentioned this, and for the sake of time, I'm going to just skim past it a little bit. But again, I said protect the little kids, protect the big kids too, but start to teach them how to use the tech wisely. On the resource page is all kinds of things you can do. So I told you that we've worked with high school kids, 20-something kids in high school, college. So you may think we've talked about technology a lot this morning, but I can't really emphasize enough that it's the biggest teacher of sexuality to our kids in our culture. And like, I really mean it when I say that there's not anybody that I know. I ask them this way, I go, do you think this is a true statement if I said this to you? Do you meet with anybody who porn is not touching their life in some way? And he said no. So I really mean it when I say that it is going to be a thing. It is a thing. It's going to be a thing. So if you don't know, like, I'm not that tech savvy. So like, thank goodness he's helpful. Ask us. We know some of this stuff. Now you can use alternative browsers, turn off Safari, install KidRex or SafeSearch or Canine so that your kids can still, you know, explore on the computer, still have curiosity, but are doing it in a way that's more honed in. You can get a filter for your router. We use the Circle. We really like that one. It allows you to put all your devices on there, and depending on the age of the person, set the appropriate content level. So if you're a preschooler or a child or a teenager or adult, you can set the right level for them, and it has online time limits on there. It even filters people who bring their device into your phone. So you're having a slumber party at home, and a whole gaggle of kids bring in their phone, and you're like, what's going on in the basement with the phones? They're on your router, you know, so that's a good thing. So just look into some of those things. Okay, and the last thing is trusting God with our kids' sexuality. So I don't know about you, but maybe even talking about it this morning, this happened to me this week as we were preparing for this, it can bring up fears of inadequacy in me and fears of wondering, gosh, what's ahead for my kids in this area? You know, we even still were, as we were looking at some of this stuff, it's brought up things that we've done imperfectly and need to act on still ourselves. And so we all love our kids in this room so much, and we want what's best for them. And so I thought to end on a couple thoughts about trusting God would maybe be a good thing, that God is our help in this. You know, maybe you didn't grow up in a Christian home or a home where sex was talked about in this way. I didn't. Or maybe you've made a bunch of mistakes sexually that you regret, and you're thinking, I cannot do this. You know, I can't talk to my kids like this about sex. I can't do it. I'm still growing in this area myself. Well, here's some promises that help me. God promises to be our help, that he's with us in this, and he loves our kids even more than we do, that he's equipping us for this good work, that by his Spirit, as we're trying to be faithful, that he is equipping you as the role of parent for your specific kids, that he's giving us strength when we feel weak. Like I said, in the car, I get these questions, and internally I'm going, oh my gosh, that word, you know, like, oh, why are you having to hear that word? You know, that he gives me strength in that moment to not turn from that precious opportunity to speak his words of life to my kids. So he will give you strength. And that he gives wisdom about our specific kids and their specific circumstance. So ask him for help as you do this. Come to him. Depend on him. We need his help as we attempt this task. The second thing is it's never too late. If you're sitting in here thinking your kid's a bit older, you're feeling like, I didn't start when they were 3. That is a bummer. What the heck? It's not too late. None of us in here is perfect parents. There are ways in which all of us are going to need God's grace to make course corrections in our parenting along the way. That counselor that wrote that chart, she suggests just going to your kids and admitting your weakness and your oversights. You know, maybe your kid's 10 and you were going to wait till they were 12. You had sex on the radar, but you thought maybe they didn't need to hear it till 12. Just go to them and say, you know, I wish I would have brought this up sooner, but I'm wondering if you've already heard about sex. You know, what have you heard? And then you could even end the conversation to say, please forgive me for not teaching this sooner. You know, it's my responsibility and I regret that you've heard things from others and not from me, but I'd like us to keep having conversations like this one. You can still pave the way. Or if you've painted the picture that sex is only bad and a to-do list of things not to do, you could always go back to the kids and say, you know what, I want you to see that this is really a good gift from God, and I'm sorry for not telling you the ways that it's one of his lovely good gifts to you. And lastly is that God can use mistakes for good. So maybe you're putting too much pressure on yourself or on your kids to get it right. Like, if I do this perfectly, I will have sexually pure kids. I for sure thought this to myself. Like, look, I've done the steps. You know, it means they're going to wind up being, you know, perfect in this area. So what I want to say is we do need to be faithful to teach our kids in this area, but it's God that needs to change their heart to want his ways. We cannot do that part. You know, we can tell our kids of the ways of the Lord and how his commandments are for their good, but they ultimately have to believe that that's true, and they have to begin to act on those things themselves. So when our kids make a mistake, and they will all at some point make a mistake. I want to just say that. You know, we need to trust that God can use that for good in their life. I mean, think about your own story. Nobody in here has a perfect sexual story. Nobody does. And hopefully that is one of the things that has driven us all to Jesus and helped us to see our need for him. And hopefully it will for our kids too. It's a chance to minister the gospel truth to them as they make mistakes. And as we show them grace and mercy with their wobbles along the way. Okay, so what we've covered is why it's important we're the primary teacher, what biblical sexuality is, what to say when, how to trust God with the whole thing, and hopefully you're not overwhelmed. To cover from preschool to middle school with sex is a lot of stuff, so hopefully you're not overwhelmed. Here's the takeaway. You can do this. We, as a community of people in the church, can do this together. I mean, matter of fact, I would even advocate that we should do it together. Let's be each other's friends and comrades in this. I sometimes say, if you can't ask me, go ask Rachel. You know, like, have friends that your kids feel safe. Let's do it together. Get your hands on one of these resources. Oh, this is all it takes. Get your hands on a resource and start in faith with God's grace, walking your kids through it. Protect your tech and pray. That's really your little short to-do list. So let me end by praying. We're not going to have time for Q&A. We'll stay after. If you want to ask us a Q&A question, you ran too long. It's your fault. I'm blaming you.
I ran my time.
Ending on that last little nugget, which I said was to pray. Let me just close this in prayer. This is one of my favorite books called Praying the Bible for Your Children, and it has a prayer called A Passion for Purity. So why don't you pray with me? 1 Corinthians 6, 18 to 20 says, "Flee from sexual immorality. All other sins a man commits are outside his body, but he who sins sexually sins against his own body. Do you not know your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you've received from God? You're not your own. You are bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with your body." Lord, I pray that my children will develop a passion for purity that is even greater than the urgency of the sexual drive you've given them. May they always think of their bodies as your dwelling place and want to keep them pure for you. Help my kids to feel they can bring their questions about sex to me. Please give me the right words in awkward moments so I can help them feel at ease, as well as answer them clearly and fully and with confidence. Nudge me when it's the right time to pass on an important attitude or piece of information, even if my kids aren't asking for it. Oh, Lord, these are such tough times for a teenager who wants to be pure. Please, Lord, give my children strength to hold on to what they've been taught about these things from a young age. I pray my children will see through the barrage of false and immoral messages about sexuality portrayed on TV and in the movies, and fill our children with a genuine and enthusiastic desire to have sex, to save sex for marriage. Lord, please use every important influence in your power, spiritual conviction, our example, their Christian friends' belief systems, medical facts, even their own logic, to add up to a winning case for the wisdom and value of saving themselves till marriage. Keep Satan from succeeding in making my kids think it's futile to try to be sexually pure, or that because they're tempted that they're evil and might as well give in. Remind them that you were tempted, Lord, but because you remain sinless, you have power and compassion to help them when they're tempted. Show my children that it's actually courageous to run away at the first sign of sexual temptation and help them to avoid situations where they could fall prey to lust. Signal them when it's time to say, please don't do that, or I think I better take you home. Above all, Lord, may abstinence not seem to them a sacrifice as much as a way to guard a wonderful treasure. May my children and all of our children grow up knowing that sex is a gift from you worth celebrating and protecting. Amen. So thanks, guys, for being here today. Sorry we ran a little long. If you have questions, please come up and holler at us.